Welcome to Local SEO Today. On this podcast, John Vong interviews business professionals and entrepreneurs in many fields to uncover challenges and successes in business ownership. Our goal is to provide you with insights into the entrepreneurship journey and give you tips and advice from real experience. Brought to you by Local SEO Search, based in Toronto, Canada.
Joining me today is Brad Martineau. Brad spent over 7 years leading the product development team at Infusionsoft. Today, he is the co-founder and CEO of Sixth Division. They help entrepreneurs build a better client journey through automation that results in more sales. Thanks for being on our show today, Brad.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Awesome. So I know you're busy, so I'm going to get right into it and ask you, so what do people know you by today, and how did you come about starting your own company?
Yeah, for sure. So that's a great question. What do people know me by today? I mean, the biggest thing that I get known for, and we actually have some jokes. So like, I do a lot with Digital Marketer. There's another sort of Digital Marketer of Canada that's called Archangel, and in different worlds. And we kind of joke around like how to introduce what I do. And they like to say, oh, it's Mr. Automation or Mr. Funnels. And I always sort of roll my eyes because those are the buzzwords that are in the industry. Everybody wants a really cool funnel, and everyone wants this automated business. So that's probably what most people would say. Yeah, if you want to get automation dialed in, go to Brad. I because it's what I do, it's kind of like, you know, what you do. Anyone introduces you and they put like the little layer across the top, like, no, that's not, but I mean, it's sort of what I do, but there's so much more to it. So I would go in and I would describe it differently. But anyone that's sort of swimming in that sea of all of the different ideas and the technology of how they can make their business, you know, be more automated and put their funnels together, that's the world I live. And that's what people would probably describe me as or would know me for.
That's amazing. So you mentioned just briefly Archangel. So is it Geo that you know or you work with? So I've been going to the Archangel the last 3 years. So
awesome.
It's been a great event that you put on, definitely.
Yeah, I love the stuff that he puts together. I've been up there. You've been going to Summit?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny. So I'm in a group with him. Like, I don't know, he's got his different tiers. I'm in a group with him and I show up. So I've been in Toronto the last 3 years when Summit's happened in other meetings, but I've never been able to make it to, Summit yet because I've always had conflicts. So I'd have to fly home. So at some point, because I know his production is like off the charts, but at some point we'll get there.
Oh, that's great. So at least when you're here, we can hook up as well.
Yeah, there you go.
So before I get into it, so how long have you started your company? What's your back history as to how long were you at Infusionsoft before you left?
Yeah, so Infusionsoft, so I started there part-time back in 2004. Came on full-time probably 2005, 2006. I was a sixth employee there. I was at Infusionsoft for probably 8 years, maybe 7.5, 8 years, somewhere in that realm. And I was a sixth employee, started as the entire support team. And for anyone that's listening, I guess it'd probably be worthwhile. Infusionsoft is now called Keep. And it's a tool that helps entrepreneurs organize their client journey. And I'm sure we'll talk about that more at some point, but just so your context. So I was the entire support team. There were only six, and their support team, which was one person, was moving to Utah to go to school. And so I took over, not even really knowing what a CRM was or any of this, but I was the entire support team. And then I moved into onboarding new clients. And then eventually I got into product development, which essentially was identifying what do we want to build into the product to make it easier to use, make it more valuable. Working with the development team, and for probably 4 or 5 years, I was involved in everything that got released out of that software tool. And that would have led up to, say, 2010. And then in 2010, I got fired. I say fired, they did a round of layoffs. They laid off like 10% of the company because they hit, you know, businesses hit like, there are peaks and valleys, believe it or not, in businesses. And they laid off 10% of the company and I was included. But I like to say fired because it makes it more dramatic. So I turned around, I'm like, well, what do I know how to do? Well, I know how to do this really well because nobody knows more about this product than me because I've been building every single thing that comes out. So I did some freelance consulting, realized really quickly at that point, like I don't want to do any freelance consulting. And so about a year and a half later, I teamed up with another guy that ran all marketing and sales at Infusionsoft. And we started Sixth Division to help. Initially it was, let's help people figure out how to use Infusionsoft because that was really the only tool that existed. Yep. To, you know, automate your business. And I'm going to keep doing air quotes for automate because I think it's actually, that's not what people should be shooting for. But it's the buzzword. So, that's what we started was like, hey, we'll do automation. Cause that was Infusionsoft. It was the only thing that existed. And then over time, now you got a whole bunch of different options. And so now it's more about the client journey as opposed to specifically Infusionsoft. So what our business does is works with people that use really a whole slew of tools from HubSpot to ActiveCampaign, like all over the board, but to help them get really clear and then be able to better leverage automation. So it's been, that's sort of been the journey. Started there, sixth employee. And here's the cool part. When I started, there were six employees, and I want to say we were doing maybe about $500,000 in revenue or something like that. And I got a front row seat being the sixth one, and I was a part of like the executive planning meetings most of my time there. I got a front row seat to see that company go from like $500,000 to like $17 million in recurring revenue a year, which is a really cool trajectory to see, watch. And then I worked with a lot of clients, so I got a firsthand view of like what's working and what's not working. And it's always changing, but it was really interesting to see sort of the mindsets that entrepreneurs take to their business and what helps somebody be successful when somebody else is not successful. So it's really cool. But anyway, that's the journey of what got me to here and now running Sixth Division, trying to change the world, world domination like everybody else.
That's amazing. No, that's awesome, man. So, going in school and trying to figure things out and starting working at Infusionsoft, did you ever imagine like starting your own company? Was this something that you've always wanted to do growing up?
No, if they wouldn't have fired/laid me off, I would probably still be there. It was not like the timing wasn't great. So I got five kids and my fifth child had been born 6 weeks before I got laid off. So the timing sort of sucked. But I look back on it, I've said it took me a while to get to this, but what I've said and I will continue to stand by is if I could be in the room where they chose which 10% to lay off, I'd have put my name up on the board first, even if I knew I had to go through all the same things I went through, which there were some crappy things that I had to go through, because I love what is available with entrepreneurship. But I was not in any way, well, from a DNA standpoint, I have entrepreneurial blood running through my system, but I hadn't clicked or processed. There was no way, like mentally, I didn't have the makeup to be an entrepreneur. So I'd definitely still be there if they wouldn't have sort of kicked me out of the nest, as it were.
Yeah, I think that's where you transition, right? Or transform to be a more well-rounded person, right? When you take that risk where you have no idea how to run a business, but you just put yourself into it and just do it, right? And I think when things happen, like situational, you just got to figure it out because you got to feed your family. You got shelter. You got things that has to be done, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, some people, it's really interesting because there is a shift that has to happen and there's growth that has to happen in order for you to actually be an entrepreneur that can run a business. Some people, that shift in growth happens and then they go start a business. Other people, they sort of, because of circumstances, they get put into the situation of, oh, I've got to run a business. And then the shift or transformation happens. And not for all of them, because for some people they start and then the business, crushes them, so to speak, and they go back and they get a job somewhere. For me, all of that transformation absolutely 100% happened after I started the business. I probably spent the first year and a half of my business trying to figure out how to get out of my business until one day I woke up, it clicked. And I was like, oh no, I could actually decide to stop being afraid of this thing. And I could go turn this into something that I really, really want. So it's yes, there's an interesting curve that happens. And I've always told people, so a couple of things. One, I believe that entrepreneurship is the greatest tool to show you all of your weaknesses and force you to front them, like to confront them. There's no, you can't be an entrepreneur if you're afraid of, or you are have no desire or are unwilling to address your own shortcomings, because it will expose them and leave you feeling like you're naked on a busy corner in downtown like Manhattan or something. and then the other thing that happened for me specifically is, because like you said, like you just go start a business and you got to go figure it out. We all, as much as we don't want to, or we want to say that we don't, we all operate like out of fear to a certain degree. And for me, when I started, I was more afraid of deciding what I was going to sell and then going and selling it than I was not having any money, because I had some money set aside in savings and I got a little bit of a severance, so I could afford to entertain that fear. And then there's this magical thing that happened. So my fear over here of not making money was lower than my fear over here of making decisions in my business. And then as the bank balance decreased, there was this interesting thing that happened. This fear started to grow. And then this fear actually didn't really decrease. It just stayed here. But there's a point where this fear got greater. Yeah. And so what I tell people all the time and what I try to remind myself is like, look, it's really clear. You can either run out of time or you can run out of money or you can run out of both. And then at that point, you no longer have the luxury of being stupid. Stupid being entertaining the wrong fear. Or what you can do is you can just know that that's coming and you can pretend like that happened and get over the fear. Because everything shifts when the fear of stepping into driving and running your business becomes less, like you can't be more afraid of that than you are of failure. Make sure I said that right. You can't, yeah, you have to be more afraid of not having this outcome that you want than doing the work to get it. And there's this magical time where it shifts. That's where we're like, oh, I can go create something. And a lot of times with entrepreneurs, I see a lot of sort of timidness in the, well, I don't want to make the wrong decision. And I'm a little bit afraid to go do that because I've never done it before. And the reality is as long as somebody's sitting still and not figuring out those things, it just means that they're more afraid of taking a risk, taking a chance than they are of not being successful. But your brain's never going to, like your brain doesn't be like, oh, let me show you what you're doing. Your brain is wired to protect you. So it's like, no, you're great. You should just stay here. That's a really risky thing to go do. And then as soon as your comfort starts to go away, like, oh crap, this is not a sustainable model that I don't go actually do anything in my business. So that's what happened for me as I woke up one day and literally it was April 3rd, 2012, if you want to get specific. And I had business and personal bank accounts all overdrawn. And that was the day that we had sponsored an event. So we had like a $25,000 bill to sponsor this event. I had just signed a personally guaranteed lease on an office space. That was like three times my mortgage and all of my accounts were overdrawn. And that night I'm getting on stage to go sell. And I was scared out of my mind because it was by far the most expensive thing that I'd ever sold in my life. We're selling like a $6,000 offering. But again, right? Oh, I have no money in my bank accounts, like business or personal. And I'm afraid of like selling. And all of a sudden it was like, whoop, okay, this adjusts. We're going to go sell because if not, I'm now more afraid of the other problems. So there's absolutely this sort of emotional journey you go on as an entrepreneur.
No, that I totally agree. I mean, and it's all independent on the person themselves, right? Not everyone's cut up for this, right? And it's all your willpower, your desire, and it's really internal, which is, you know, everyone's fighting their own fears, right? Yep. The challenge is how do you overcome it? Some people just give up, right? Some people just, you know, they're going to keep going, but they don't really understand what's going on, right? Like they have to understand why they're doing, what's the purpose, what's the main driver of it all, right? So yeah. You definitely had a driver because you had no money, you had a family, you got to support. Like these are very, very strong will desires, right? That you got to just figure things out.
Well, yeah. And I think what's interesting to point out too about that is there's two different types of motivators. You got push motivators and pull motivators. Push motivators are I'm running from something, and that's an effective form. It's an effective form of motivation when there's something you're running away from. I don't know, like negative bank balances, right? That's a motivator to say, let's get away from that. So I will now go do things that otherwise I would not be willing to do in the absence of negative bank balances. So that's one form of motivation. It's a lower form of motivation, but it's absolutely there. And I think I shouldn't say for most humans, I don't know. I've done any studies around it, but I've seen it a lot. And I know that when I'm not progressing in my own life, it's because I'm only allowing myself to be motivated by push motivation. Because here's the problem. It's sort of like a magnet, right? If I get two magnets in there, and I don't know enough about magnets to describe the actual science behind it, but I get it to where they're opposing forces and they're trying to push away from each other. If they're really close, the magnets push harder back. But the further away I get, there comes a point where there's no magnetic force. They're too far apart. And the same thing happens with that kind of motivation. As soon as I have money in my bank account, if all I'm being driven by is I don't want to have negative bank balances, then the only thing that I have, I don't have any motivation anymore, which means I'm back on a path that it's going to slowly sort of slide back towards this thing until I have no money. And then I bounce back and forth between that. And I've found myself in that loop. I think lots of people find themselves in that loop. And that's push motivation. Pull motivation is when I'm not being motivated by trying to run away from something, but I'm actually running to something. And it's an elevated form of motivation where I set a target about the impact that I want to create about, you know, both for my clients, the impact that I want to create for myself and for my family. When I can shift and develop the ability to set my sights there and be motivated by that, it's an elevated form of motivation. And I don't think that it's as black and white where it's like, oh, I'm either operating out of one or the other. I think in different assets or different facets rather of our life, we're always working, you know, some parts of our life are push motivation, some are pull motivation. But I think you're right. Like some people, like you got to have something that's driving you. And it's okay if it's a push motivation. Like if you're just running away from something, leverage that so that it can drive you somewhere. But just know that eventually the force of that is going to fall apart. It's going to, or fall away. It's going to drop off. So it'll help for a while. And I want to harness that energy while I have it. And then I want to convert it into, okay, now where am I going? And that's what happened in our business about a year and a half, 2 years in, is I basically stopped trying to run from my business. And I started running towards what I could go create with my business. And it made a total difference in the success of the company, in my personal success. It just made a total difference overall.
That's amazing. I mean, you know, and this is very important for all the audience members, because when you're working in your business and you're running, doing everything, you're like lost, right? Like you have no clue what the end goal is. But when you're working on your business and figuring out what is your end target, what is the motivator, what is, you know, impact that you want to create, it brings way more clarity in yourself and why you're doing what you're doing. Much more purposeful, much more impactful. Everything you're doing is with an intent, right? Versus trying to work in your business and not knowing what the heck you're doing, right? And this is what people kind of do when they start a business, right? Like they have no idea what they're doing anyways, but the sooner you kind of get out of it to have a better understanding of why you're doing it, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, totally agree. There's a quote that I love. I'm trying to remember who it's by. Robert Heinlein. And he says, in the absence of clearly defined goals, we become strangely loyal to daily trivia until ultimately we become enslaved by it.
Yep.
And I love it because it's exactly, basically harnesses exactly what you're talking about, is in the absence of knowing exactly where I'm going and what I'm doing, what I'll do is I'll make myself busy with work. And then I'll become so addicted to the feeling of doing work that I'm too scared to stop and actually assess whether or not the work is actually getting me where I want to go, because I don't actually know where I want to go. And it's a little bit uncomfortable, or if I'm being honest, it's really uncomfortable to step out and decide where I want to go. And so we start to get some level of success, and then we assume like, oh, well, I'll just stay here and keep doing the work that got me here, without stepping back and saying, well, where am I actually trying to go? What am I actually trying to create with this? So I agree. You're going to go, as an entrepreneur, my experience is you're going to go through bouts of, it's not really clear, because everything you're creating, you're trying to figure it out. But it's got to be there has to be a constant amount of energy being directed towards getting to clarity. Yep. And getting to clarity both in the overall outcome you want to create, and then also getting, like, at every level in your business. It's funny, we actually had a call there with a bunch of clients, and this drawing back here is I was walking them through the idea of like, how to get to clarity. Because one guy's like, I just got all these ideas, I got all these things going all over the place, I'm trying to get organized and clear. I'm like, oh, well, there's a framework for that. There's a way to organize that so you can systematically be tightening down the bolts of your business at every level, so that you're really clear. You're not spinning your wheels in this sort of vague, nebulous land, right? So I totally agree.
No, that's awesome. So another question. I know you kind of got into your own business, but were there people that inspired you to become who you are? Like, were there people that you looked up to, and were there mentors that you kind of gravitated towards to really help you or propel you to who you are today?
That's a great question. So, all right, I'm gonna go back to the timeline. So yeah, short answer is yes. For me, the way that I tend to operate, there are people that inspire me in seasons, because of things that I'm working on. And so when I started, like, there was nobody that was like the inspiration, like, oh, I'm going to go out there and make this happen on my own. That was you don't have a job anymore. And then now you're out of money. So it's like, go figure it out what you're going to do. I'm a big fan of, like, if I go for a theme of the people that would be inspirational for me, I'm a big fan of people who are building, I call it a real business. And by real business, I mean, they're not chasing after every flash in the pan way of making money without having to work idea that comes. Because I believe those are all like flash in the pan. At the end of the day, in order for you to create something valuable for somebody else, it's going to take this crazy thing called real work. Yeah. And I'm inspired by people that are just genuinely good people, like that are up to something in the world. So I'm trying to think. I don't know that anybody would actually recognize any of the names if I started listing off names sort of as I go through the journey, because I find that there were like different phases where I would have a challenge, but then I'd come across somebody, or I'd meet with one of my partners or one of my buddies again that I knew. And they would like, I think if you look back at life in general, and this is what occurs for me as I look back and think about my journey as an entrepreneur, it's pretty impressive, almost literally unbelievable how your success is sort of strung together by this seemingly completely arbitrary chain of events. And it's the like, oh, this one person made this one comment in this meeting, and it flipped this one little piece inside my brain that set me up to be able to, 3 weeks later in this meeting, it shifted the way I was thinking. In this meeting, I heard this thing from this other person. So it's really interesting to me to see when I look back how it's like little micro adjustments. And you know, some people could say that it's coincidence or whatever. I don't believe in that, but.
But that's amazing, because for even hearing that, it's like karma, right? And also it's like living in the moment, right? And when you self-reflect and you start looking back and figuring out, why did this person come into my life at that given time? What was going on in my situation, and how did it really impact your life, right? And it's very similar to like when you lose a customer, for instance, and then the next day, a customer that you kind of didn't even know will reach you out to you, and you sell them even a larger package or whatever it is. Right. It typically happens, and it happened to me so many times. And I'm like, maybe it's the best situation that could have happened, because that customer was whatever it was, right? Like driving, right. Whatever. So it's like when you reflect and you kind of look back, and it's like, wow, you know, it just happens, right?
Yep. Yeah. So if I go to like the list of names, back to your question of like who inspired me to become who I am today. So there are a couple of names that people will probably recognize that are a little bit more well known that I'll address. And then there's a slew of people that were like just in the right moment at the right time, happened to say the right thing, and have made like fundamental transformations about where I am now. When I go back, the very first book that I remember reading that sort of laid the foundation for everything that we did was a book by Michael Masterson called Ready, Fire, Aim. And he basically breaks down the five phases of growth in your business. It's like zero to a million, 1 to 3, 3 to 10, 10 to 100, 100+, or something like that. I don't know. I only read the first section because I didn't have any money. So I don't need to know how to go past a million. I need to figure out how to get to a million. And he breaks down like, what's your primary challenge in each one of those phases? And then what should you do? That, not necessarily like an inspirational person, but that book framed for me this idea of like, you're going to grow this business through phases and just go focus on this. So it's really, really valuable. Another one, I'm going to totally butcher the name. It's by Greg Crabtree. It's called Simple Numbers, Something Else, Big Profits. Anyway, there's something, it's a yellow cover book. And it was the first time I read a book about finances that made me appreciate and understand why finances are important and break it down in a way that was pretty simple. So like, I got this vision of like, here's how to go grow the business. Then I stacked with it this like, and here's how to make sense of the numbers, because ultimately everything in your business comes down to those numbers, like the dollar bills. You probably ought to have a really good system around that. So those two really, really help sort of frame the underlying foundation of a lot. Like if I go trace it back, almost everything that I've ever created sort of sits on the foundation of your business is going to grow through phases. And then this other one that is, there's a very systematic approach to the finance that can make sense. And then as I start to get into people, like right now, so I'm not a huge social media person. I have a lot going on already that being like online and scrolling through stuff just doesn't really work for me. The one that I'm on the most is Instagram, and I follow, I think, 7 accounts right now. And it's my wife and my 5 kids. So there's
6.
That would be 6 of them. So it might be 9. So I've got I've got 5 kids, but they're not all Instagram. So I got my 2 daughters and then my wife, that's 3 of them. My daughter has a business account for a thing that she does. She's really artistic. So that's 4 of them. And then another one is David Goggins. He wrote a book, Can't Hurt Me. Have you read that?
No.
So such an amazing book. He's an former Navy SEAL. Also former, like any of the top elite programs, like he graduated all of them. And the book's called Can't Hurt Me, and it's how to get your mindset dialed in. And I follow him because he posts not every day. It's every once in a while. But it's also, it's very much around get your, like, build the muscle that is your mind. The book's phenomenal. The stuff he posts is phenomenal. So he's one from like an inspiration to, I want to have a mind like the dude runs 100 mile marathons. He just ran the Moab 240, which I have not quite figured out how any human being would get excited about running 240 miles. But he did that. So that's one, that's another one that I follow. And then another guy that I follow that I really like is Eric Thomas, the hip hop preacher. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's a motivational speaker, and I've been following him forever. In fact, my alarm every day when I wake up in the morning is a clip of one of his, it's a clip of one of his talks here. Actually, I'm going to play it real quick. This is what I wake up to. And it's, I'll tell you where I get to my phone, 'cause it's very, very intentional. Let's go to edit. All right. So this is what I wake up to. Okay, let me do it again. I'm here to tell you, number one, that most of you say you want to be successful. I heard of this guy. You don't want it bad, you just kind of want it. You don't want it badder than you want to party. You don't want it as much as you want to be cool. You, most of you don't want success as much as you want to sleep. That's when I get to my alarm, is right there. So, like, I get to it, and I'll be like, all right, I'm maybe tired a little bit, because it's across my room in my bathroom. Yeah. And I roll up to it, right, and it's like this slap in the face. And he's like, yeah, most of you don't want to be successful as much as you want to sleep. I'm like, son of a, now I can't go back to sleep. So I follow his stuff. And he's, and again, just as like a mindset. So most of the people that I follow now are really dialed in and organized around making sure that I can get my mind really, really dialed in and focused on what I want to create and be mentally strong. So those would be the two primary people that I follow. And then I, like, if I were to look at, like, have inspired me, those two have been really inspirational just around, like, how I'm going to show up in the world. And then, like I said, there's a whole slew of people that nobody would recognize, nobody would understand. but I'm really clear as I look back that there are all sorts of people that have made a, played a massive transformation or a massive role in me getting to where I am. So I try to stop and just take stock of that and recognize that they're all playing pieces. I just think it's valuable.
No, that's amazing, man. So during your career, so far, what has been some of the biggest mistakes or challenges that you kind of overcame? Because, you know, running a business is challenging daily, right? And people problems, customer problems. But can you think of like a couple of them that kind of you were really close to kind of giving up? And
yeah, for sure. So I mean, so the first one I talked about when I had no money, I went and sold that night and we sold enough that we stayed around. I mean, obviously we're here on this podcast, so it didn't die. And the reason why I got to that point is because I was unwilling, because I was afraid to just decide on something that we were going to sell and then go try and sell it and then allow it to just iterate. So this fear of just deciding and then recognizing that life is this cyclical learning process. So for the people that are watching the video, my hat is my own brand that I created, and it's Dollar, D-A-L-R, and it stands for what I believe is the philosophy for how to be successful in life. D stands for decide, A stands for act, L stands for learn, R stands for repeat. And when you decide, decide to start simple. When you act, act with violent imperfection. When you learn, learn without ego. And when you repeat, repeat as fast as you can. So the first mistake that I made early, early on in my business is I didn't decide. And because of that, I had like, I mean, I probably spent 2.5 years missing out on opportunities to make lots of money when the market was super ripe and there was nobody else around. I could have crushed it and I just didn't. And the reason why is because I didn't realize that it was a cycle. It's decide, act, learn, and then do it again. So you decide and then you act and it either works really well or it doesn't. And the only reason that it would fail is because you don't learn. And then you learn and you just go through the cycle again and you let things evolve. So that was the first biggest mistake that almost didn't even have this thing get started. Is me presupposing or believing that I had to have everything figured out and it had to be perfect before I got going. So that was one. And then another one that was in the last couple of years, we have a mantra now to guard against it. And the mantra is don't get bored. And the statement sort of behind that is there are no great companies or great people. There are only companies and people who are insanely disciplined to do the boring things that lead to greatness and consistently do the boring things that lead to greatness. And so like our business started running, you know, we brought people in and things were going great. We did 7 figures in our first year. And then we grew every single year after that. We got probably 3 years in and then looking back on it, like, I didn't know this was what's happening then. Otherwise I probably would have done something about it. But looking back on it, I started to get bored. And so I started to put people into place to run everything. And then, and I didn't pay nearly as much attention to it as I should, because I was kind of bored. I'm like, oh, I hired people, right? I got people to handle that. So they should be able to take care of it. And I stopped paying attention and keeping my finger on the pulse of what was happening. And then what happened is the things that we did to get us to be really successful and to have this business work the way we wanted, those started to slip. And then all of a sudden found ourselves in this business that had way more people with a way bigger payroll and way more overhead, and nobody was having fun. And we just sort of like slowly evolved to that. And then as you start to, and then as I start to see those cracks, because I was sort of bored and I tried to distance myself, then what happens is I don't want to go address it, because now I'm more afraid of it. Like, I don't want to go admit that I did this and that I've got something that's broken now. And so for a while, I actually separated myself even further, rather than just being like, okay, this is going to get worse if I don't step in and change something. And that was, you know, in the last 2 years, got to a point of like genuinely, honestly looking at numbers and considering, okay, what would happen if we just shut the whole thing down? We could go this route. We could go this route. There's a bunch of different things that we could go do. What if we just got rid of the whole thing? And then ultimately recognizing, well, I heard a quote by, again, this is one of the quotes. Somebody said this. I don't even know where it was, but they said, don't ever quit while you're running uphill. And I love that quote. Don't ever quit while you're running uphill. Like, you can get to the top, and then when you're not going uphill, then you can decide if you want to quit, but you don't get to quit while you're running uphill, because it's hard. And for me, it was just accepting the fact, like, look, this is, we're in a crappy spot. I created the crappy spot, but we're going to get out of it. And then if I decide I want to shut it down, then I can shut it down. But I'm not going to run away from the personal growth. Like, this is just a personal growth challenge. If I shut this thing down, all I'm doing is I am running from me having to face the thing that I created, and having to basically take ownership of it. And there's a, it reminds me of, there's a quote by Dan Sullivan, Run Strategic Coach. I think it's by him, actually. I don't actually know, but he says all progress starts by telling the truth. And that was a really good, like, hey, let's just accept what's happening here. Let's acknowledge why it's happening and identify what needs to change. And a lot of it was like, I just need to change how I'm approaching it. And you know, there's a 3 to 6 month stretch that was, you know, really, really fun of downsizing and trimming, and like, I'm just being very sarcastic, there was nothing fun about it except for the outcome at the end. So two, like, if I look at like two really big ones, the first one was unwillingness or being afraid of just deciding, and then like, it's okay if it's wrong, you just make another decision later, no decisions are permanent. And then the other big one was getting bored and letting my focus and my attention drift under this idea, like, oh, well, I've got people, so I can go do bigger and better things. It's like, no, if you don't have enough time to be focused on what you're working on, then you ought to just start to trim things until you can have focus on the things that you're working on. So those would be like the two major challenges. And both of them, I have sort of like a lack, like I have sort of like a relaxed approach as I talk about it. But to give sort of like this, the, I don't want to use the word severity, but like we'll call it the weight of the situation. We're talking like weeks away from the business not existing anymore. In both situations, there we were like literally, I could see it on the calendar that we were, well, I mean, one with the bank accounts is pretty obvious, but like days or weeks away from shutting the whole thing down and leaning that way, like emotionally and everything, and be like, no, forget this. This is stupid. We can just go do what it actually takes to be successful. And then if we get there, then we can decide if we want to quit, but we're not going to quit while we're running uphill. So those would be two examples.
I think these are all growing pains, right? So what you mentioned, the first example is like pivoting and understanding when to pivot and get in as soon as possible and learn, adapt, figure things out, right? And if the product doesn't know, like you don't even know your audience, you don't know what product services that you're appealing to, figure it out. Maybe that's not the demographics that you want to go after, right? But unless you go in, as many surveys as you put out there, you don't really understand and know, right? But until you're in it and running a business with clients actually pay and has a recurring kind of business, and you have staff that you got to feed, and now you're responsible for feeding their families as well, right? Like it's a different dynamic when you start growing and scaling your business, right?
Yep.
And you know, going on the second fact of, you know, stepping away.
Real quick with that, with the key though being, it's a different dynamic, but it's still the same core business. That's where the focus has to be, is like, you got to master, I think Dean Jackson calls it the unit of one. But like you, when it's just you or you and one other person, as you start to scale, what can happen, and this is what happened to me, is your focus can be, or your, and you can start to get afraid of or intimidated by, like, now there's this other overhead that sits around this core sort of nucleus, so to speak, of your business, which is the people that you're serving. And when you lose focus of that and you start to get sort of in awe of, oh, I've got team members and payroll, you're now taking your eye off the core thing that makes everything else run. And yep. So you've got to keep that focus and yep. know that your growth and your scale only happens and only ought to be happening as long as you're keeping the client, like the delivery for the client, you're getting that, all that has to stay intact. And then you scale. And if you start to scale and it's like, oh, this is not working the way I want, then you just step back and you're like, okay, let's come back down, get this thing locked down. We'll try another route to grow and scale. But a lot of people end up sacrificing the very thing that makes their business up, which is their clients and their happiness. They yeah. sacrifice that. It's like, well, I got to go grow and scale this thing. Like, no, like not today, not necessarily. You could, it could be like, oh, I tried that in the first 2 months of the year and it didn't work. So I came back down. I tried this other thing and now we're 6 months in. Try this other thing. And maybe the fourth way is the way that you can scale it and still keep that core foundational layer intact, which is called, I don't know, you have to get clients and then make them happy. Like that's
exactly. The funny thing is I've always been in sales, right? I've been doing sales all my life, newspaper, yep. Did sales at Yellow Pages. And when I first started the company, I didn't even really have my services, right? Like I didn't really know SEO, right? But I knew there was a demand and need for it. So I basically just sold it as a salesperson. Yep. And then I kind of figured things out afterwards and grew my company that way, which is a little bit different, but you should be the strongest proponent of selling your product, right? And you have to be really impactful and understand what value you're bringing to the table, right? So when you're selling that to your staff or when you're growing too fast, even like growing too fast, right? And why do you want to scale? Why do you want to grow more? Is it revenue? Shouldn't be the main purpose. Is it more impact helping others? Maybe, right? But are you really doing good by growing as fast as you would like? And who's setting these goals? Is it just self-perceived goals? Or is it realistic data-driven goals that you think would make a difference, right? Because you're just putting your own goals in yourself. Like you're just putting it on yourself. No right. one's really setting these goals, right? And so what happens if it doesn't hit? So what? You're running a business, right? It's like you figure it out, reduce some expenses or whatever it is. But yeah, like I totally get it. Like running a business is tough. It's never easy. And there's always going to be mistakes. And I still continually make mistakes daily, right? And it's okay. It's more like acknowledging it, let people know and move on, right? And yep. yeah, let people be responsible, figure things out themselves, but don't let them slide too deep. Right? Because yeah. I really want people to actually acknowledge and take ownership, but I also want to be on top of them as well to let them learn, but it doesn't cost you as much. Right.
Right.
So in terms of, I know you talked about like some of the mistakes, but you know, in terms of some of the biggest advice or any of the things that you can kind of implement, what have you learned over the years that can talk about where it really helped you grow your business or scale or made a big impact?
Yeah, for sure. So two things that I would lean on or look to or talk or call out as like the things that I keep going back to and they just keep working. And I'm of the approach, like I'm not going to fix something that's not broken. Exactly. So it's going to keep going back. The first one, when we started this company, still true today, is we make every client happy. And some people are like, well, you can't make everybody happy. I'm like, yeah, you can. I mean, maybe you can't, but I can. And that requires you to, take a different level of approach to how you approach, like to how you handle your clients, right? You got to have an elevated sense of commitment to creating that your clients are happy. But I don't ever want people to leave working with Sixth Division, even if whatever they hired us to do didn't work out. So, cause there's a difference. Like a lot of people are like, oh, well, if someone comes to you for SEO and it doesn't work out the way that they thought it was going to, then some people are like, oh, well, that means that they're not happy. And now I've got to be ashamed of that. I'm like, no, they're only going to leave not happy if you don't acknowledge it and then go talk to them about it and then come up with something where you can say, hey, look, this clearly did not work out the way you wanted it to. It didn't work out the way we wanted it to. Let's figure out how we're going to make sure that as you leave, like, I want you to leave with a taste in your mouth. It's like, yeah, they did me right or whatever. You know what I mean? So one core thing is more important than anything else in the organization is the fact that you are producing happy clients, period. It's what is the foundation of your business. It will always be. I don't care how many team members you have. Team members cost money. I know salespeople sell money, but in order to sell, they've got to have something to sell and someone to sell it to. And your brand, you can't out, in the long term, you can't outrun a crappy brand. And your brand is basically what people experience as they go through consuming your products and services. So that would be the first thing and foremost thing is, what are you doing throughout your entire client journey? And ironically, maybe it's not ironic, but it's exactly what our entire business is built around, is helping people create, design the ideal client experience from the moment they capture a lead, and then making sure that it's happening consistently. That's what we do. That's why, that's sort of what I alluded to. And I was like, yeah, it's not really automation, but it's bigger than that. But that's what we do. And that's the core underlying thing, is constantly refining, iterating, and then just like, I don't know, talking to your client and figuring out how they're doing. And I could get into a whole slew of specifics, but we're gonna run out of time. But the point is a relentless, ruthless commitment to the client experience and to making sure the clients are happy and you're producing a result. If I had to pick one thing to lean on, that would be it. Like, just go do that, because that is like, you know what every business that is actually a business has? It has a client that's giving you money in exchange for a service. And your extent, your ability to grow it is directly correlated to the extent to which you can produce a happy client systematically on demand. So that'd be number one is, it requires you like step out of your own mind and stop thinking about what you need out of the business and say, well, if I'm a client going through this, was like, I don't know, try your own process. Have your spouse or your friend sign up and see what happens. And have five of them sign up and see how consistent or inconsistent it is. Yeah. And it's not, and that's like, so that would be a very specific thing you could go do. If anybody wanted to like a very tactical thing I could go do right now in 5 minutes, go find five people outside of your business and have them just test drive what happens after they sign up with you.
Yeah.
Just see what happens. And what I'm looking for is it consistent? And like, is it amazing? Like, is it cool? Or is it just like boring like everybody else? If it's boring, then they're going to be bored. Like, just newsflash, right? So you got to look at that. And that's like a very small piece that's sort of like starting to look at one corner of a teenager's dirty bedroom. It's like, oh, look at that. I can kind of organize this. You start the rest of your business. There's more to do, but that's a good starting point. Yeah. So client experience would be number one, client happiness. And then number two is develop. You got to organize how you think about things in your business. And what I mean by that is you have to have again, relentless, ruthless commitment to creating systems to organize all the ideas that come into your business, that come into your brain. Don't settle for what 99.9% of entrepreneurs settle for, I believe, in that, oh, there's just a bunch of ideas and it's going to be overwhelming. It doesn't have to be. There's a framework. There are systems that can help you organize how you think about your business. So if you find yourself facing the same challenges over and over again, create a system around it. So what I've developed and trained in my brain that I believe is one of the biggest reasons why I can create some of the things that I can create is I've built systems to organize, like all the ideas that come in, I built systems to organize them. Again, that's what I was drawing up on the board with our clients before. But the ability to come and be like, all right, this idea has to do with how I get clients. This one has to do with team. They're not the same. I don't need to be thinking about them at the same time. They go into different spots. How I organize the work that I'm doing in my business gets organized based on what's actually happening in the business. So anyway, it's a little bit vague because again, we don't have time to dive into it specifically. So it's more of like, I guess what I would leave for people that are listening around this idea of organized thinking is your business does not have to be this chaotic, tangled web of ideas and software tools and vendors that you're like, holy crap, I have no idea. Like this is just overwhelming. It doesn't have to be that way. And it is for almost everybody. There are systems and structures you can put into place that literally calms all that noise down so that you can just go run your business and not be stuck in trying to figure out where things are. So that would be the second one, is get to the idea of, okay, how do I organize? How do I start to get organized in my thinking? In fact, okay, this example, we got a couple more, we got like 2 more minutes or something. I can share this. Yeah. Okay. So this might be helpful as an analogy for this idea of organized thinking. Cause like, as I'm saying it, like, I don't like to be like the podcast guest or the speaker that's like, hey, let me give you this vague and generic idea. Good luck. Cause nobody needs any more of those. So this analogy might help on the second idea of organizing thinking. I call it the Lego principle. So have you ever bought a Lego set before?
Yeah.
Okay. When you open it up, what comes out?
Instruction manual.
And what else?
And all those pieces?
Nope. That's not what comes out. Bags come out.
Bags come out. Yeah.
Okay. Now, so this may seem subtle, but it's significant. Lego figured something out. I believe the concept of the Lego principle is one of the single greatest skill sets. One of the single greatest principles that an entrepreneur should strive to master. It'll change your life. So here's what Lego figured out. Let's say we bought a 1,000-piece Lego set, like the Death Star or something, right? So if I buy that for my son, let's say 7 or 8, super excited about Star Wars, and I take it home and I give it to him and he opens it up and 1,000 pieces drop out on the ground, what is he going to do? Or she, this is not exclusive to boys or girls, right?
You're both.
What is he going to do?
Daddy, help me.
Yeah, he's either going to give up, which means he's never going to ask to buy a Lego set again, or he's going to come to me. If I walk into a pile of 1,000 pieces that are sitting on the ground, what do you think is going to happen?
You got to organize it all.
Yeah, well, look, we might get that thing put together. I can tell you what's not going to happen. We will take routes around the Lego store at every mall we ever go to again, and never again will I buy another Lego set. Not going to happen. I'm not going through 1,000 pieces. Because, like, imagine the visual of a 7-year-old sitting in a pile of 1,000 pieces trying to figure out all the different things to put together. That, like, almost perfectly describes most entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in this chaos of all these things in my business. So here's what Lego figured out. They're like, you know what? Here's what we can do. We can take the 1,000-piece Lego set. We can break it up to 10 or 15 bags. And then we'll give instructions bag by bag. And you just go put the bags together, each one individually. And then you throw the bags together. And voila, you've got this really cool complex set that's been broken down into these individual concepts. So I call it the Lego principle. What we're trying to master is this idea of modular thinking. The ability to say, hey, I've got this really complex business. Yeah. But the business is just made up of Lego bags. And when you can start to create the infrastructure, so like if we just flip over here, for you audio listeners, sorry, you should have watched the video. But like this right here is the thing I created. It's called the small business stack. You have to deal with my chicken scratching. It's a small business stack. It is the first 4 bags of your business. Every conversation, every challenge, every problem, everything you ever do in your business will fit into one of these 4 bags. So the very bottom is you. Let me go this way here. The very bottom is you as the leader. Your business cannot outgrow you. We already talked about that before, but you are the foundation. So there will be ideas, challenges, strategies, work to be done, money to be spent on upgrading and developing you as the leader. On top of that, we can stack your vision. This is how clear you are about the purpose of your business, what you sell, what's included with what you sell, the financial model that says you're actually going to make money. That's big Lego bag number 2. Up from that, it's team. This is all the people that you're going to have on your team. It's how you hire them so you get the right people. It's how you organize them, what your meeting rhythm looks like. And then up here, I know we were talking about this thing called clients. It's how you get clients and how you make them happy. Those are the first 4 Lego bags. And then inside there, there's another set of Lego bags. It's kind of like, we'll call it like Russian nesting Lego bags, because you just break it down. So I've got these 4 layers, you, vision, team, and clients. And then if I get into team is like, okay, cool. How do I organize the roles? That's a Lego bag of how I'm going to organize the roles to get work done. Second is, how do I go hire and find the right people? That's another bag of things I need to consider. Third one is, how do I organize my team and how do we work together? What's our rhythm? What's our meeting rhythm? Those could be 3 Lego bags that sit inside that. So you just start to break it down and you're like systematic. When ideas come in, it's not like, oh, I got this thing. I'm going to go run with it over here. Like I'm this like crazy artist. Like, nope. I want to, like, for sports, do you watch football? Are you a football guy?
I'm a basketball guy.
Okay. So am I. I watch enough football to understand, like, quarterbacks, when they drop back, they're literally, when they drop back to pass, they have like reads. They're just methodically going, oh, not available, not available, not available, not available. That's the mindset that entrepreneurs want to have, I think, when you come to ideas is, I got an idea. Okay, where does it fit? And I'm just systematically saying, hey, this one fits here and I'm either going to work with it right now or not. And if not, I kick it off to the side. I'll go look at it later. But there's a very systematic approach. So hopefully that's a little bit more tactical as far as like this idea of organizing your thinking. But if you have a relentless and ruthless commitment to making your clients happy, which is where like automation and those kind of things can come in, right? If you have that and you're, again, ruthlessly and relentlessly committed to it, and you develop this ability to be organized in all of the ideas as they come in, man, you can do, like, I'll take those 2 things and you can take everything else away from me and I'll rebuild it again. And I'll rebuild it in a fraction of the time because I've got the systems around it. And it's, so those would be the 2 sort of success things or tools or mindsets, however you want to categorize them, that I would preach and talk about to continue to be successful. They've helped tremendously. Amazing.
I got one last question for you, which is, aside from the business end of things, what are some of the main pillars in your life that really drive you, Brad, to be who you are?
Right? Okay, so believe it or not, after what I just talked about with organized thinking, so in my closet in my house, I removed a whole hanging rod and I've got a wall that organizes my life into Lego bags. I mean, they're not called Lego bags, but they're Lego bags. So the very top is sort of the overarching principle or statement for me. There's 2 pieces of paper. The first one says, at some point after I die, I will meet the man that I could have become. I plan to be looking in the mirror. So my like underlying theme and drive is, I want to become the greatest version of me that I can become while I'm in. I believe it's my responsibility while I'm here to do that, which means like fear, you don't have an opportunity to be in my life because you're not going to help me get there. So that's the statement. And then to the right, I have my dollar framework off my hat. I have that listed over there. It's like, and this is how we're going to do it, by the way. So that's what we're trying to do, is that we're going to do it. And then there are six sheets of paper that are basically the six buckets. And it goes like this. Number one is disciple. Number two is husband. Number three is father. Number four is friend. Number five is provider. And then the sixth one is me. And those are all in order on purpose. So for me, those are like the foundational layers. If I'm out of alignment, if I don't have it dialed in as a disciple, then it doesn't matter how great my relationship with my spouse. Like I've got the wrong order. Same thing with, I can have a really great relationship with my kids, but if I'm screwing it up or blowing it with my spouse, not going to work, right? So all those in order. And then the very last one I put at the end, which is it's me. And then I've got sub buckets for those. So like in me, it's my health, it's my mindset, it's my work ethic, and it's my, like, what am I doing for fun to be balanced? But I'm only focused on those so that I can go invest those into the first five buckets. And for each one of those, I've got a little definition of what it means. I've got what my habits are that I want to have in place for each one of those. And then I've got my current things that I'm working on as like a priority or a goal across each one of those. And they sit in my closet as a reminder when I come in, like, all right, this is where I'm going to spend time in my life. This is what's valuable and important to me. Here are the things that I'm going to go do. And here's what I'm working on. Here's what I'm working on right now. So for me, if I step back and say, okay, what drives me? And when do I feel like I've got my life the way that I want it? It's when I can say like, yeah, I'm making solid progress and I feel good about how I am as a disciple, a husband, a father, a friend, a provider. And then like, that's really it. I just have to check those off. And then for me, it's just, am I being healthy enough to go do that? Or do I have an opportunity to improve my health so that I can be better at one of those buckets?
So do you actually reflect on that on a regular basis, or do you change any of those buckets?
So not the buckets. Okay. I spent a really long time getting it whittled down to those, because they're very practical in terms of how I actually go spend my time. So and the buckets might change, right? I mean, I'm not that old. I do have some gray in the beard, but I'm not that old. So there may be some time where like it shifts a little bit. But I kind of feel like those are the buckets of life. Like that's just what it's somebody else that created this whole thing already decided what they are. It's like, look, here are the buckets of life. So what changes is my understanding and definition of what it means to me. So like I've got some quotes and some points under each one that says, hey, this is what this represents. Like under spouse or under husband, I read a book by Clayton Christensen, How Will You Measure Your Life? And changed my approach to my marriage. There's one line in the book. He said, most things will change in people's marriages once they shift from trying to find somebody who will make them happy, and they shift to trying to find somebody whose life who
you cannot live without.
No, that's not what he said. It was even better than that, because I've heard that one before. It's when you shift to go try and find somebody where it's worth it to you to devote your life to making them happy.
Gotcha.
And the quote is, it's way cleaner. I forget the exact quote, but I have it there. So it's just like a definition. So like my understanding of each bucket will change and adapt. And then the habits. So the habits are like, what am I going to do daily, weekly, monthly, and then yearly? Those will change. And then obviously the very bottom is almost like a project list of like, okay, right now, primary focus is this as a husband, or this as a father, or this as a friend or provider, disciple, whatever. And those will obviously change because it has to do with what's going on in my life. But the buckets, I don't know that I see the buckets changing because they sort of capture everything already.
That's awesome. I know you're busy. You got to run. How can some of the listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah. So go to sixthdivision.com. And that's sixthdivision.com. And it's actually, go to sixthdivision.com/local SEO. We've got a little training. So like the whole thing that we play with is how to get organized in your thinking. So like I've referred to some of the systems we have, we actually teach those. And then also we teach how do you apply that directly to your client journey so that you can do a better job of getting the clients that you love, making those clients happier, and being able to do it in less time and with less energy required. So that's, if that at all sounds interesting, you got to go check it out, because we could probably help. But go to sixthdivision.com/local SEO. We'll have a little page specific for people to come from the podcast that'll give you some more specific things you can go do, and then some ways that you might want to work with us, and we can, you know, we'll talk about that. But
awesome. Well, thanks a lot. Really appreciate your time, Brad. This was great. I had a lot of fun. And we'll, if you're in Toronto again, hit me up.
I am sure I will be in Toronto again. So we'll try and make that happen.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Brad.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to our latest podcast. Please subscribe to Local SEO Today and tune in to our next episode.